Okay, we're going to start Babar on page 172. But if you remember, after the celebration for the great city of Celesteville, bad things happened. The old lady was bitten by a snake. Cornelius's house burned. And Babar was stressed. Misfortune, despair, anger, all those things were weighing heavy. But then in his dream, hope and intelligence and patience came and chased them away. And they fixed Cornelius's house, and the old lady got better. And then we get on to a trip by Zephyr, who went back home to visit his family in Monkeyville. And Zephyr reads it lives in a tree, and he received a present, a rowboat from Babar. And out fishing he went, and he caught a mermaid, but he let the mermaid go because she gave him great promises. And on his way back, he finds out that something big has happened. Extra, extra. We're on page 172. He finds out Princess Isabel has vanished. Poor little thing, thinks Zephyr. It can't be true. She was on the beach this morning when I started out to fish. He listens to the passers-by, and this is what he hears. Isabel was playing in the palace gardens when suddenly she was surrounded by a green cloud which wrapped itself around her, hiding her from her friends. Then the cloud rose, leaving behind a strong odor of rotting apples. The princess hasn't been seen since. General Hook, full of anxiety and despair, calls out his guardsmen and gives Colonel Aristobald his orders. "General," this brave officer replies, "I promise we will do our very best to find your daughter, the princess. By air, by water, from the treetops and the mountain peaks, even through the underbrush, Aristobald and his soldiers hunt for the princess. In spite of their efforts, they find no trace of her." General Hook arrives in his car to get the latest news. When questioned, the colonel lowers his head sadly. The general understands what this means and goes away with a heavy heart. Zephyr is the only one who doesn't give up hope. Secretly, he puts a gourd and some provisions into his backpack. He also takes with him his most prized possessions, his violin and his clown costume. He then starts off towards the sea. Luckily, the beach is deserted. He picks up three pebbles, throws them into the water, and calls out three times, "Eleanor, my friend, Zephyr awaits you here." Instantly, just as she had promised, the little mermaid appears. "Isabel is lost. Can you help me find her?" asks Zephyr. "That will be difficult," she answers, "but for your sake, I'm willing to try. Wait here, I'll go and get my carriage." A few moments later, Zephyr is happily seated in a gigantic seagoing shell. They are off. The racing fish pull them along speedily. Eleanor guides them towards a wild-looking island and points out, saying, "That's where my aunt Crustadel lives. Let's visit her in her grotto. She will give us some good advice." "My children," said Crustadel, after listening to them in silence, "he who smells of rotting apples, he who carried off Isabel, must be Polomok." "Who is Polomok?" asked Zephyr. "He is a monster who lives on his island with his friends, the Go-Goats. They live on herbs and fruits and are not savage, but they are bored. From time to time, in order to amuse himself, Polomok goes off for a trip in a little green cloud. If he meets anyone he likes, he carries him off to his cave. That is what has happened to Isabel. He is capricious, impatient, and has a bad habit of turning to stone those who anger him. Little monkey, if you want to save your princess, there's not a moment to lose. Eleanor, will drive you there and wait for you. Take this old sack. It will prove useful. And remember, in order to succeed, you'll have to make Eliamach laugh. You'll recognize him by his pointed horns and his yellow skin. Leave at once. Good luck to you. After a good crossing, Eleanor and Zephyr land without being seen by the Go-Goats. The country looks bleak. They are now silently taking leave of each other. Zephyr holds his friend's little hand in his own. So if we look on page 180, we see the island, and it's just covered with kind of like green rocks and stuff. Zephyr puts on Crustadel's sack. It covers him and his few belongings completely, and he immediately resembles the rocks which are scattered all over the island. He walks cautiously to the top of the hill while working out his plans. When he gets to the top, he hears a gruff voice. Quickly removing the sack, he peeks through the rocks. There is Isabel right in the midst of the monsters. "Little monkey," growls Polamok. "I carried you off because I thought you'd be amusing, and here you are doing nothing but cry. I've had enough of this. I'm going to change you into a rock." Looks like he changed a lot of people into rocks. "Lord Polamok and you, ladies and gentlemen, permit me to salute you," says the brave Zephyr politely as he suddenly emerges from behind the rocks. "I am a clown musician by profession. Pray allow me to stop here a while to try to entertain you." Isabel, recognizing him, drops her handkerchief and thinks to herself, "Ah, he has come just in the nick of time." Pretty soon, thanks to Zephyr, everyone is at ease. A pleasant air of gaiety prevails. He tells them stories, one about the rat with an elephant's trunk, one about the blind huntsman, one about Captain Hoop-La-La and the gun made of macaroni, and one about Persifuile and Filigran. Each time he finishes a tale, Polamok and the Go-Goats cry, "Tell us another! Tell us one more!" Tired of talking, Zephyr now dons his clown costume. What luck to have brought it, he thought. Presto! There he is. Now I am going to show you a game, the chase of the magic hat. Having said these words, bang, crash, he falls down and turns several somersaults at top speed. And then, when he catches his hat with his tail, Polamok bursts out laughing heartily. "That's fine," thinks the crafty Zephyr. "One more little stunt, and the time will be ripe for action. My plan is a good one. By tomorrow, we will be far away." Then picking up his violin, he plays waltzes and polkas, one after another. Carried away by the music, they all jump and whirl about giddily. At last, tired out, they roll over in a heap and go to sleep and start to snore peacefully. Zephyr takes off his costume and prepares to escape. "The moment has come," he whispers to Isabel, and they dash off to the sea as fast as their legs will carry them. Eleanor is waiting and waves to them. They are saved. Land is in sight. On their way back to they stop to thank Crustadel. Some birds have announced their return, and the news travels fast. Polamok and the Go-Goats sleep on. The monkeys come running from all directions. Some run down to the beach. Others watch from the cliff. General Hook takes out his spyglass. Zephyr's family cries for joy. Zephyr and Isabel are warmly greeted by the enthusiastic crowd, who shower them with flowers. They've said goodbye to the gentle Eleanor, who has gone back home with her fish. The general congratulates Zephyr in front of the soldiers of his guard and says, "My young friend, I, General Hook, President of the Republic of Monkeys, am proud of you and give you my beloved daughter Isabel. You may marry her later on when you become of age." After this ceremony, when Zephyr goes home, his father and his mother, his sister and his brothers all make a big fuss over him too. They are so happy to see him again that they don't scold him for having gone off without telling them and causing them so much concern. They dance around him and sing, "Long live the betrothed." After starting off with this astonishing adventure, the rest of the holidays pass peacefully and happily. Zephyr goes back to Celesteville. As long as he lives with the elephants, Eleanor, his sisters, excuse me, as long as he lives with the elephants, Eleanor and her sisters will watch over Isabel. Well, we're coming close to the end. We will continue on page 197. One morning, Babar says to Cornelius, "Old friend, you have been a constant companion through good times and bad. Listen now to my wonderful news. Celeste, my wife, has just told me that she is expecting a baby." Then, pointing to the footstool, he continued, "Here is a new hat for you, and also a message I have just written to my subjects. Take it and read it to all the inhabitants of Celesteville." After having congratulated and thanked Babar, Cornelius puts on his dress uniform. Standing before the gateway of the royal palace, he tells his drummer to assemble the townspeople. Slowly, he unfurls the king's proclamation, puts on his spectacle, and reads in a loud voice. The elephants gather in large numbers to listen respectfully. "Dear and loyal subjects, when you hear a salute fired from a cannon, do not be alarmed. It will not mean that another war has begun, but simply that a little baby has been born to your king and queen in the royal palace. In this way, you will all learn the glorious tidings at the same time. Long live the future mother, your queen, Celeste, Babar." Here reproduced exactly is the message which Cornelius read. Well, I just read it to you. Babar is trying to read, but finds it difficult to concentrate. His thoughts are elsewhere. He tries to write, but again his thoughts wander. He is thinking of his wife and the little baby to be born. Will it be handsome and strong? How hard will it is to wait for one's heart's desire? Celeste urges him to go for a ride on his bicycle to take his mind off the big event. Babar finally consents. After having pedaled several miles, he finds a pleasant spot and decides to rest. Seated on the grass, he admires the surrounding countryside, Celesteville, Fort St. John. "It is from there the cannon will be fired," he says to himself. Oh, so if we look on page 202, there you can see Celesteville on the left and the tower of Fort St. John on the right. At this very moment, boom, Babar hears the salute. There it goes. "What a shame I wasn't at home," thinks Babar. He immediately mounts his bicycle and rides home as fast as he can pedal. There up on the turret, the artillery captain of the King's Guard carries out the orders he has just received by telephone. He gives the command. One blank shot is fired, then another, and finally a third. The elephants gather in groups on the promenade and begin to wonder and ask questions. King Babar had only mentioned one shot. Why did the gunners fire three? Cornelius cannot understand it. Babar reaches home quite breathless from his fast ride. He also has heard three shots. He dashes headlong upstairs, joyfully rushes into Celeste's bedchamber and embraces his wife tenderly. He smiles and she smiles and proudly shows him three baby elephants. That explains everything. One salute for each child. Three babies, three salutes. But what a surprise to find three babies when you only expected one. The old lady has one in her arms and the nurse holds the other two. Arthur and Zephyr are terribly excited. Babar has given them permission to come and see the babies. They walk in quietly. "Oh, how tiny," says Zephyr. "Oh, how cute," adds Arthur as he admires the baby lying in the cradle. Celeste had prepared only one cradle, so the nurse quickly makes another one out of a wash basket and a towel and umbrella. It is crude, but the babies are warm and sheltered. Here are the babies settled now in the garden and asleep in the big perambulator. Okay, perambulator. Wow. Babar and Celeste receive the congratulations of their friends. Almost everyone brings a gift. Poutifor, the farmer, and his wife bring fruits from their own orchard. The hens offer some eggs. The gardener some flowers. The bakers present a huge cake. Cornelius brings three silver rattles. Now, Bob R. and Celeste have to find three names for their children. Of course, they had discussed this before. Palm, Pat, Peter, Julius, John, Jim, Alexander, Emile, Baptiste. Alexander isn't bad, but what if it's a girl? Juliet, Virginia, or, well, we'll simply have to come to a decision about their name, says Celeste to Bob R. I'd like our daughter to be named Flora. I'd like that too, says Bob R. And as for the two boys, I think we might choose Palm and Alexander. After having repeated Palm, Flora, and Alexander in one voice, Bob R. and Celeste declare, that's perfect, let's keep these names. Every week, Dr. Kapalous puts the babies in his big scale and weighs them. One day he says to Celeste, Your Majesty, the babies aren't gaining fast enough anymore. You must supplement their feeding with 6 bottles of cow's milk, to which you must add a tablespoon of honey. The little ones soon get used to the bottles. Arthur and Zephyr like to watch them drink. Palm is the greediest and the fattest. He is the one on Celeste's lap. He always cries when his bottle is empty. Wow, on page 210, we have a whole bunch of square pictures about Flora. Flora is very good and lies in her cradle playing with the rattle which Cornelius gave her. She throws it up in the air with her trunk. What a nice jingly noise it makes. She puts it in her mouth and sucks it. What fun. Suddenly, she doesn't quite know how. She swallows it. She chokes, gets purple in the face, and her trunk trembles. Celeste rushes to her. She grabs her, turns her upside down, and shakes her, but still the rattle won't fall out. Fortunately, Zephyr manages to pull it out with his hand. Flora is saved, but she cries most bitterly. Her mother tries to comfort her. Now the children begin to run and play in their big sunny nursery. Bob R. often comes in to play with them. Today he sits Palm on the end of his trunk and bounces him up and down. It's like our game Ride a Cock Horse. Cornelius, well, we'll stop right here on page 213 and we will continue later. Good night.